Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-hosts Alfred Adisk and James Corbett of the Corbett Report will be joining you for the second and third segments for the program today. And today is Thursday, December 17th, 2015. Once again, thank you for joining the program this afternoon. It's a rough day for gold today, both gold and silver. And, you know, it's a day late for the reaction to the Fed's decision to raise rates a quarter point. The dollar had a very strong rally in the USDX, and there was a lot of pressure on oil also today. Crude oil prices were lower, and they were back near their recent contract and their multi-year lows. So, a bad day for the commodities. So, gold today is down $21.60 currently in the New York spot price, $21.60 at $105.1. Silver was down 47 cents today at $13.80. Platinum was down 30 at $846. And even palladium was down $16 at $558. So, the biggest hit on the that had the worst metal was platinum. It was down almost 3.5%. Crude oil today was also down big today. It recovered a little bit, down 65. It was down a full point earlier in the day, but it's down 0.65 at 34.87. USDX today was up 0.86. at 99.22, so that was your big the biggest pressure on the dollar today. And the paper markets today, they had a big reversal. They were up earlier in trade, and let's get to the paper markets today. I know they're down triple digits, so let's see where they ended. If my computer would so comply, so I can bring you those numbers, the accurate up to the moment, but it's rejecting my requests for that. Let me go ahead and just make a mention while this is coming up on the so I can give you, it looked like it was the Dow was down 177 points, but I got a nice email from a client today, and you know, he, and I know most of you remember Bob Chapman. And he references Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster in this news, in this email to me. He says, I remember Bob telling us there would be wild swings up and down daily as the system unravels. And that is one of the signs. It is an unraveling of the system. Todd goes on, he says, I think of him when I see what is going on these days. But he often thinks of this verse, though. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. He says he didn't look up the chapter and verse, but he knows he will take care of things his way in the end. And he says he feels sad for those who don't have a clue about what eternity is all about. Then he goes on and mention some other things, but it is true. We do have these big swings, these that we're going to see in gold and silver. Bob had talked about huge swings of $100 to the upside and to the downside in days, and so this is something we just have to deal with, and remember the fundamentals of what gold and silver is all about. And we buy it to protect our purchasing power, and it is one of the few investments that has true fundamentals. Even though it's manipulated, we get that, but the fundamentals are still there. The Dow was down 1.5%, down 253 points at 17,495. The NASDAQ was down 68 points at 5,002. The S&P was also down 1.5%. Down 31 points at 2,041. 10-year yield down 0.05, 2.24%. The euro 108. And Germany was up big, 2.5% earlier before they closed. It was actually closer to 3%. Big moves. Germany had a couple of 3% moves. Markets don't move like that. Japan was up 1.5%. So, you know, everyone's reacting to the quarter point rate increase. And there's a number of companies that are defaulting on their obligations. And when we see the price on oil, the pressure on oil prices, you have to remember that a lot of these defaults is driven largely by these struggling U.S. shale gas providers. I don't want to talk about this today unless we have some time left over. But you have to remember what is going on. We see these junk bonds, the pressure on those. These emerging market borrowers are accounting for 19 of these defaults, second largest source of failures. Europe has counted for 13, and a remainder are in other developed countries like Japan and Canada. When we're talking about these massive defaults that we're seeing on the debt, on these heavy debt loads. So, but what I wanted to talk about today was, of course, the massive spending and tax deal that Congress has reached, an agreement on a $1.1 trillion spending bill to fund the government for the 2016 budget year and extend $680 billion in tax cuts for businesses and individuals. This is another, this I believe goes to vote tomorrow. President Obama is expected to sign the legislation. But folks, it's another book of 2,000 pages, close to 2,000 or 2,000 plus pages. Now, how can anyone read it in a day and a half and get a fully understanding of all the legal jargon that is in there? They were given only a few days before the vote. I believe the vote is tomorrow. It is disgusting, but some of the highlights, I'm just going to touch on the highlights. We can go a little bit deeper into detail when we have a little bit more time tomorrow. But one of the things, a Planned Parenthood, oh, that was such a, you know, when we found out they were harvesting body parts from little babies, certainly every Republican was going to, we are going to defund that. They didn't even cut it. So, as expected, the spending bill does not defund Planned Parenthood. The vice president of Planned Parenthood said that they praised congressional Democrats on Wednesday for holding the line against these harmful policy riders and cuts to key women's health programs. Extreme members of Congress spent an entire year targeting access to reproductive health care at every opportunity. And as she also added, to the point of even threatening to shut down the government. And so again, I mean, what a bunch of disgusting Republicans who only talk the talk. I mean, all you heard about was how they were going to defund this, even sections, or cut, you know, cut something, but nothing, nothing. But I knew, and you probably knew, that they weren't going to touch it. Obama and his global warming agenda, you know, that continues. The bill doesn't explicitly appropriate funding for his pledged contribution to the Green Climate Fund, the GCF, but it doesn't block the money for the GCF either. So Obama's expected to be able to use current discretionary funding streams to send American money to it. So it's Obama pledged last year to spend $3 billion on the fund by 2020. He asked Congress to appropriate up to $500 million for it in 2016. And, of course, what Obama wants, Obama gets. Let's see. Another is going to be to... Money is going to be spent to resettle illegal immigrants that are arriving at the U.S. border through 2018. Congress would award the massive check to the government just as the U.S. is experiencing a surge in arrivals of immigrant children at the southern border. Last week, federal agencies said they were opening two temporary shelters with 1,000 beds in South Texas to cope with the surge. A 400-bed shelter is also to be opened up in Southern California. In October and November, the U.S. government data showed, and you know how accurate that is, so we know these are just estimates and the number is probably much, much higher, showed that over 10,500 unaccompanied immigrant children crossed the southern border with Mexico. That number is more than double the count of minors that arrived at the border during the same time period last year. There is a request for 5,000 more beds. I mean, how can anyone be surprised about Donald Trump's lead over all the other candidates? I saw an interview. It was, I can't remember the guy's name on Fox. Cruz was being interviewed, and he was asked about his position on the illegals. I never heard a man stutter so much. I never heard him stutter before, but he certainly did. I mean, they just continue to lie, and they get caught in their lies every once in a while. But this $1.1 trillion funding bill includes language that would dramatically increase the number of visas available for foreign workers. This is another part, setting off alarm bells among conservatives and labor unions. Congressional leaders quietly slipped the provision into the 2009 page funding bill, and of course that they only had it since Wednesday morning. It is going to triple the number of H-2B visas for foreign workers seeking jobs at hotels, theme parks, ski resorts, golf courses, landscaping businesses, restaurants, and bars. The move is intended to boost the supply of non-agricultural seasonal workers. These foreign workers are brought in to fill the blue-collar non-farm jobs. Senator Jeff Sessions says that you know, these jobs are given to these folks, and but these occupations are sought by millions of Americans. Sessions estimates that the number of H-2B visas will soar from 66,000 to 250,000 because of the language in this bill. The International Labor Recruiting Working Group said in a statement the language would prevent U.S. workers from getting first dibs on jobs and deny U.S. workers the right to the rights to the same wages. Workers the rights to the rights to the same wages. You know, I have family in a beach area on the East Coast, on the Eastern Shore. And I didn't know this. I can remember when I was, in high school, the big thing was you wanted to go to the beach and, you know, and work during the summer so you could be there. It didn't pay much. It was enough to pay your, you had little rooms that you would rent and so forth. Now all these jobs are given to, they bring over young people from various parts of the world, partly subsidized by the local and federal governments. They come in, they provide them rooms, they get room and board, people will provide beds for them, and so they have no expenses, and they work the summer. So where are these teenagers, the American teenagers that used to go to the beach and work for these jobs? It gets hard, and they say, they don't want them because the wages are too low. Well, they're so subsidized. Why don't they use their subsidies to pay for higher wages instead of bringing in people to take these jobs? I'm sure it would probably be less on the taxpayer. Because we all say the government is the government this, the government that, the government's going to pay for this. No, it's the taxpayer. It's those who have jobs that are working that gets to pay for all this. And so it prevents them, the U.S. worker, even the right to the same wages. I can remember Paul Ryan saying that if he took this position, he didn't want it, he wouldn't allow it to interfere with his family duties. Nope. Got to get this bill passed before Christmas so he can go home. He doesn't matter what's in it as long as it gets done so he's not detained to work another day longer so he can get home for his family duties at Christmas. Family tax credits permanently extends recent changes to the 1,000 child tax credit that makes it refundable to families with little tax liabilities. Let me see where else some other interesting things. $607 billion for defense. It includes $59 billion for overseas military operations. Non-defense programs would receive $543 billion. The Departments of Justice, Veterans Affairs, and Defense, they won the generous increases, as did NASA. One minute we're taking money away from the NASA, and the next minute we're giving them generous increases. Oh, that must be because of the Billionaire Club. Maybe they need NASA to help build their their planes so they can build their places on Mars. So let the taxpayers help the billionaires get to Mars. I don't know if that's in there, but healthcare law delays 2 years for Schedule 2018 implementation of a Cadillac tax on more generous health insurance plans. What's been passed for the health care is going to make it even more difficult to remove Obamacare. Hey, it's been in there for too long. They couldn't remove it anyway. They can't defund it anymore. One of the add-ons, the repeals of the four-decade ban on exports of U.S. crude oil, reauthorizes national intelligence programs. Probably the reason we've seen a lot of pressure on oil, because you now have that four-decade ban on exports of U.S. crude oil. Cybersecurity legislation is going to encourage companies to share cyber threat information. I wonder where they're going to get their expertise or what guidelines are they going to use to determine who is a threat. So there's a lot of things in there. I think one of the good things, if it's a good thing, when we talked about Frankenfish, what was thrown in, now they're going to, the FDA is going to write rules for labeling genetically modified salmon. Before it is sold in the U.S. Of course, there was a big fight about that. We know that the FDA did approve the frankenfish last month, the salmon. It would also repeal a law that requires labels on beef and pork saying where the animals were born, raised, and slaughtered. So you get some good and some, a little bit of good and a lot of bad in this bill. And I'm out of time, and that's the bad part. This 20 minutes goes by very quickly. 1-800-375-4188. 1 ounce silver eagles, $2.99 over spot till the end of the year. Give us a call. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. And Alfred and James will be with you, so please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adusk, and this is Financial Survival. Our guest is James Corbett, who is the author behind the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. James is calling from Japan. He's been there since 2004. The Corbett Report is an independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. He's also an editorial writer for the International Forecaster, weekly electronic newsletter created by the recently deceased Bob Chapman, and publishes an almost remarkable number of videos, high-quality videos, commentaries. And that's just, it's easy to sit to talk It's easy to talk. But James puts videos together, fairly prolific, that have good graphics backing up the conversation and analysis. How do you manage that, James?
I have a video editor these days who helps me out with that, so thankfully that definitely helps. But yeah, it's a lot of work.
I know. It's an incredible amount of work, and I keep seeing you're pumping, you're generating. Can you give us an idea of how many videos you publish on average per week?
It really does vary from week to week, yeah, but I have usually 3 or 4 videos a week.
That's an accomplishment. I mean, that's an accomplishment for essentially what is otherwise a one-man band. I understand you're getting help, so you have a two-man band, but even so, I have, you know, I've said before, I have some appreciation for this, and I know the work that's involved, and you're doing a spectacular job.
Well, today's, don't you wait until near the end of the month, or next week anyway, there's going to be a very, very big video, a big documentary I've been working on for the past month, so people can
give us a clue to the topic.
Yes, I can. It's going to talk about the birth of the oil industry and how the how monopolies were consolidated, not only in the oil industry itself, but then how those same oligarchs, as I style them, have consolidated monopolies in a lot of other fields besides.
Do you think those monopolies are going to hold up?
I think not only that, I think they're consolidating those monopolies all the time, and not only have they consolidated control over the education system and the medical system and the banking system and geopolitics, really, with the petrodollar, but I think they're, and also the Green Revolution and the Gene Revolution, which were heavily sponsored by the Rockefellers et al., but I think they're now really trying to monopolize the very foundation of life itself, and I think that's what the global warming nonsense is about.
Well, it sounds like a big topic, and I assume, you know, if you want to get deeper into that right now, that's fine with me.
Either way, I'm happy to wait. Talk about whatever you want.
Well, let's start with the Federal Reserve interest rate hike. As everyone knows, Federal Reserve finally did what they've been talking about for the past several years, and they apparently raised the interest rate hike. But I've looked at an arc. I haven't read the Fed documents. I don't know what they say. Perhaps you have. Have you?
The statement itself? Not yet, no.
Okay. I've got an article here from Yahoo Finance, and the headline is The Federal Reserve Interest Rate Hike, Five Key Takeaways. They have five key takeaways, all right? Now, this is a little surprising to me because at least two of these takeaways are confusing and or contradictory, and I want to see if I can get your opinion on it, and maybe you can help clarify that. One, here's the first takeaway. The target for the overnight interest rate has been raised, and the Fed will aim for 0.25% to 0.5% in the federal funds market, which is only traded by banks and the federal GSEs. This move by the Fed gives it flexibility to enact its monetary policy goals where the interest rates are still close to the critical zero bound. Now, I'm reading this, and this is, I'm going to assume that this is an accurate description. I don't know it to be fact because I haven't read the Fed document itself, but it says the target. It doesn't say the interest rate has been raised. It says the target has been raised. All right? For 2%, 0.25% to 0.5%, this is the target, and this move gives the Fed flexibility, which is simply, which I'm reading say, well, they could go to 0.5% if they want to, but they don't necessarily have to.
Yep.
And this to me is surprise. Here's item number three. It says interest on reserves was raised from 0.25% to 0.5%. And they go on. Item three says the interest rate on reserves was raised. Item one says the target for overnight interest, doesn't necessarily say reserves, the target for overnight interest was raised where they could go up to 0.5%. Do we have a contradiction here, or are we talking about apples and oranges?
I think what most people don't understand, because this is often framed as the Fed has set the federal funds rate, and people just say, oh, okay, so the Fed sets interest rates. That's not exactly the way this occurs. And it's interesting because usually that doesn't matter, because usually the Fed can influence the rate to where it wants to be. And the way that they do this, I mean, the federal funds rate is the rate at which banks are lending to each other. And it's not that the Fed goes in and mandates or dictates what rate they're going to have to lend to each other. What the Fed does is they buy or sell securities to or from the banks in order to either increase or decrease their reserves, which then motivates them to raise or lower the cost of borrowing money, which affects the funds rate. So that's an indirect mechanism, but usually, all things being equal, they can influence the rate upwards or downwards to meet their target. It's a target rate, not a hard rate. But we are now in economic la-la land, as we've talked about a lot on this program, and it's by no means certain that they're going to be able to motivate the banks to raise the rate. And this is specifically because of the QE madness that's gone on for the last several years has left the banks with $2.5 trillion in excess reserves that are now parked at the Fed. So the Fed's attempts to sell or buy securities into the to the banks is not going to really change very much. It's pretty much small potatoes compared to the $2.5 trillion in excess reserves that are already there. So it is by no means certain that the Fed will be able to actually get anywhere near their 0.5% target at this point.
This interest rate increase has been sold to the public that they would raise, we would have an absolute, it was going from 0.25% to up 0.25% to maybe 0.5%. Or we didn't know where it was going. But it was being sold as this was going to be a fact. And now what we're beginning to see, or at least what I'm beginning to see, is it appears that no, it's not a fact. Did anything really happen today?
The market's got a signal. And that's the first part of it. And then the next part will be the Fed will attempt to do some securities transactions in order to shrink the cash reserves of these banks. But as I say, it's going to be pittance compared to the $2.5 trillion that are already parked there. So I mean, other than the kind of signal that they have sent to the markets, I'm not sure anything fundamentally has changed today. It's an important signal, but it's only a signal. And they haven't gone in and changed a rate or anything. They're just targeting a new rate.
This reminds me, you know, they used to have the signal man on the railroads back in the day, and they had a lantern that was green out of one lens and red out of another lens and so on. And we're in the position of being the engineer on the train, and somebody ahead is running that. They're running the signal. All right, it's going red, green, up and down in circles, back and forth. We're getting a signal, but what is it?
Yeah.
What is the signal? And what is likely to happen? Anything? Are we likely to see a significant jump? The market went up a couple hundred points after this announcement came out. Is that a rational reaction? Is it
no, not at all.
Is it going to go...
That makes no sense whatsoever, but again, nothing makes any sense anymore. No, the response you would expect from the market to a tightening monetary environment, which was what this means, the price of borrowing money is going up. It's tightening the spigot supposedly trying to rein in some of this QE funny money that's gone out in the last several years. The proper response of the market would be for it to drop, because now there isn't so much of this hot money sloshing around in the markets, propping things up. So the fact that it would jump on this, I mean, to one extent, it just shows that the markets have already long since priced in this jump. I mean, we all knew it was coming. It's just a question of when. So this was already priced in, and now maybe the markets are saying, well, okay, so it doesn't seem like it's going to be as bad as we thought it was or whatever. So who knows? Maybe there was some glee on that, but I wouldn't expect that kind of jump to be anything more than a short-term blip.
When we talk about investing right now, when institutions are investing, are they really investing in stocks and bonds in the sense of looking at the fundamentals for a U.S. Treasury or the fundamentals for General Motors or IBM? Are they looking at fundamentals, or are they really investing in a sense, in the Federal Reserve's ability to continue to maintain market manipulation. Can the Federal Reserve, as long as the Federal Reserve guarantees that the market's going up, we got a bull market from 2009 back around 7,000 points to 18,000 in February of this year. That's going up, and generally up. We had a couple of down spikes, but we've been going up from 7,000 to 18,1, and now we're down. We've kind of turned out. We've gone flat. Have people been investing in stocks, or have they been investing in the Federal Reserve's ability to stimulate the economy, or at least stimulate the markets and keep it going up and up? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And there is absolutely 100% no room for doubt that it is 100% related to the QE madness that's gone on in the last several years. And there are a lot of different ways to look at that, but one particular chart that was... you couldn't look at it without seeing the relation, was presented by Mike Maloney at the Silver Summit 2015. He's at goldsilver.com, and he had this presentation that's up on YouTube now that's really, really worth looking at. And one of the charts that he shows is a comparison of base currency to various stock market indices. And you see, prior to 2008, 2009, when the meltdown happened and the QE money started flowing into the markets, there was no particular relation between monetary base and the markets themselves. But after that, they are in absolute lockstep. That there's just no question whatsoever that the inflating base currency is behind what's going on in the market, and that shouldn't really be surprising, especially now that the vast majority of the markets are not mom and pop investors. It is institutional investors who are playing with this hot money that's being created right now. So there's just no doubt there is a bubble. This is a bubble that has been created by the Federal Reserve, exactly like the NASDAQ bubble was created by Greenspan in the late 90s, exactly like taking the interest rates down to zero and holding them there for too long created the housing bubble in the mid-2000s. This is the Bernanke bubble that he inflated over the course of his tenure and that Yellen is going to have to deal with when it pops. And I mean, even if the Fed is able to get that 0.5% rate that they're targeting, they're going to have to reduce it down very shortly, because it is not going to have a good effect on the markets, which are 100% fantasy land at this point.
I've seen one report where they said they had to raise interest rates to 0.5% just to give them some maneuvering room in case we go into another recession so they could drop it.
Yeah, and then after that, I mean, negative rates are a thing now. There's something that people are talking about more and more.
Do you think that Janet Yellen's going to push this? Is she going to actually give us negative rates? Because I've seen at least some reports based on today's increase in the interest rate that suggest that they're going to respect that zero bottom, that they're not going to go below zero on the interest rates. They might get near to it, but they're not going to go below it. Do you think negative is still on the table?
I think it is, and I want to say that there was a Fed official that was speaking perhaps out of turn recently, talking about the possibility of negative rates. And it is certainly a sort of distant idea that they're definitely not talking about as a front and center possibility right now, but I think it has been floated. Let me just see. I'm searching right now. Bernanke says Fed likely to add negative interest rates to recession fighting toolkit. So there you go. The former chairman of the Fed is now saying that the Fed is likely to do this.
Yeah,
or likely to add
know.
It to their
Who do you
tool.
Believe? Who do you believe when you're getting statements from Bernanke and statements from Fisher and statements from Yellen?
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily consistent.
Right, yeah.
Who couldn't we count on? And is this just individuals freely speaking? Or is this an orchestrated event where they're saying, well, it might be under walnut shell on the right, and it might be under the other guy's, no, I think it's the left, and somebody else said, no, it's the one in the middle.
Right. Yes. No, that's a good point, that we have all of these different sources speaking out. And I think that is, I don't think anyone's surprised that this is how the Fed operates, because obviously the chair is seen as the oracle. you know, the way that Greenspan was the wizard of the markets or whatever, and every syllable he uttered was parsed for whatever meaning it might have about the way the markets are going. And so I think the chair at this point understands that. Bernanke understood that. Yellen understand that. So they can only say certain things to direct the markets in certain ways. And then these leaks or people speaking out of turn are ways to sort of introduce other ideas that the markets can look at. So you're right. I mean, I think this is not just, I don't think the Fed chair just gets up and says something that the Fed isn't happy, or the former Fed chair gets up and says something the Fed wouldn't be happy at least being out there. But I think that's the point. I mean, if the Fed really is not contemplating negative rates, I don't think they would want Bernanke to get up and say something about, you know, the possibility of adding negative rates. I think this is more, they don't want Yellen to get up there and say this, because that would be read in a different way. They just want someone to raise the idea and make it sort of a possibility, and then to gradually introduce that to the conversation. That's the way I would read something like this.
All right, let's take a break for a couple commercials, and James Corbett and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned. Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Addis here in Financial Survival. My guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. We're talking about the effects, if any, from today's announcement by the Fed that they're raising interest rates. Kind of, probably, maybe. Is great significance, if there is a great significance, is the real significance of today's alleged change in the interest rates, does it signal the end of quantitative easing and therefore the beginning of quantitative tightening?
Yes, well, technically...
It's not happening right now, but is this, when the history books are written, are they going to look back, well, when Yellen did that, that's when we went from quantitative easing, we went to quantitative tightening. Is that how they're going to do it? And is quantitative easing... is it finished right now, or is it just in temporary abeyance?
Well, I mean, quantitative easing technically ended last year, right? I mean, theoretically. But, yes, I mean, this is going from an easing environment to a tightening environment. We'll put it that way. And, again, I don't think that this can really last very long. I don't think it will last very long. Interestingly, the statement that Yellen made used the word gradual twice, which, you know, the markets are already taking as a huge dovish signal that basically this is a very tentative thing. The Fed is committed to keeping their balance sheet as big as it is now and being very accommodative. So this is, I mean, I assume this is why the markets are treating this kindly. But as soon as they actually really do try to start tightening the spigot and cleaning up some of the excess reserves, I think that, you know, it will be dealt with very differently. So I don't think this is, I mean, I think, I imagine when the history books are written on this period, this is going to be the Fed's attempt, but I think it's only really just going to hasten the sort of demise of this bubble that we've seen blown over the last several years. I don't think they'll be able to maintain it.
What happens when they can't? Will we see quantitative easing again? I mean, there have been some people who have argued there's quantitative QE to infinity. They've argued that over the course of the last couple of years hasn't apparently worked out quite that way, but they thought quantitative easing would never be allowed to stop. And yet it has apparently, allegedly, theoretically, it has stopped. Are we going to see it again, or is it gone forever?
I think at some point, yes. If and when this bubble starts to blow, they will absolutely throw everything in the kitchen sink they have at it. But at a certain point, it becomes throwing good money after bad, or at least new funny money after old funny money. I think that at a certain point, there's not really anything you could do. They only have a few tools in their kit, and that's why, you know, you get Bernanke saying, let's add the negative rate tool, because, again, they don't really have anywhere to go from here, which, as you say, is one of the potential reasons behind setting this higher target, is just so that they'll have something to cut when this ultimately doesn't work.
You know, you mentioned Bernanke saying something, maybe he's speaking out of turn, maybe he's not, but in fact the Fed has, if I understand correctly, three tools that they can use right now. They can use zero interest rate policy. They can use quantitative easing, which is flooding more money into the into the economy, and they can use forward guidance, where the Fed drops little hints, and they say, "Well, I think we're going to raise interest rates," or "Well, I think we're going to do this, that, or the other," and the markets, in anticipation of what the Fed's going to do in 60 days. Or 90 days, or before the end of the year, the markets start factoring this in, and the markets go up, the markets go sideways, they go down, they do whatever the Fed wants. Point I'm getting to is, if there are only three tools, if that's correct in the first place, and one of them is forward guidance, which relies on the Fed saying things that causes the crowd to react in a particular, in a predictable way, then they should be more than, the Fed ought to be more than a little aggravated if Bernanke is speaking out of turn.
Mm-hmm. All right? Yeah. And that's exactly why I don't think that is the case.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. I think the Fed, I mean, is built on the idea that it has credibility. That is one of the biggest parts of this institution, is that when the Fed says something, it will happen, which is why, you know, that every time they come out with a meeting, the comments of Yellen are parsed for every single word she says, what it might mean. And, oh, she said gradual twice. You know, that means this or that. So I think, yes, the credibility, quote-unquote, is extremely important, because it is that forward guidance ability. And if they lose that, they lose the magic, which is basically behind this central bank dominated economy. So I think that when you have Bernanke or insiders like that, Fisher or whoever, coming out and saying things, I think it's the Fed covering bases and potentially introducing new things to the script so that they can be introduced from the sidelines and then adopted eventually by Yellen once the markets have had the time to digest it. I think that's what we're looking at as a phenomenon. I mean, I don't think anyone that at that level is clearly really saying something that they're not in some way authorized to, or at least allowed to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think all of this is orchestrated, but hard to know what I see there's somebody up there waving the baton, but I can't quite catch the melody. Still wondering what the song is that they're orchestrating. When we say central bankers, what's the difference between central bankers, that word, that concept, and the concept of central planners?
I guess I would say central bankers are a subset of central planners. They're
okay,
that subset that work. Yeah, they're that subset that works specifically on monetary policy.
I've got an article here. Gold analyst warns there are about 325 paper ounces for every physical ounce backing it. This is ultimately traced back to Zero Hedge. It's not Zero Hedge I'm reading from, but Zero Hedge reported in September something snapped in COMEX market, and all indicators suggest there was a relentless outflow of in registered gold. At the time, there were about 202,000 ounces of gold available for delivery. This compares to where they had about 1 million ounces available for delivery earlier in the year. Right? The amount of gold has fallen at COMEX, according to this report, by about 80%. This likely means that someone somewhere is requesting that their paper holdings be converted into deliverable physical gold. Well, this isn't precisely news, but I wanted to get your take on this. What's the significance of having 325 paper ounces of gold in COMEX for every 1 ounce of physical gold that's available? And who, if anyone, is the mystery man or institution who's requesting that their paper holdings be converted into deliverable physical gold?
It's always a good question, and this seems to come up every year. I've been watching these types of stories for at least, I think, 5 years now, when certain commentators, who I won't even bother to name, were predicting the imminent crash of COMEX because, look at this, there's these, they're trying to convert, and there's not enough gold to cover. And look at the great outflows from the storage. They've been saying this year after year after year for several years now, and it hasn't happened yet. And I do think the fundamental analysis is right. There is way more paper gold than there is actual physical gold to cover it, and if and when people actually do en masse start cashing out, then clearly that system is going to come to an end. But it hasn't happened yet, and I don't think it's likely to happen in the near term because we are in commodity deflation right now. The precious metals are still, I think, have further to deflate before I think things start to kick off in the other direction. And that will be basically what we have with the quantitative easing bubble is not just a stock bubble like it was with the NASDAQ bubble. It's not just a housing bubble like it was in mid-2000s. It is right now. It's a stock bubble and a housing bubble and a bond bubble. And all three of these are set to turn over in the near future. Even just going from a technical analysis, just looking at, for example, the 35-year cycle in bonds, it is time for that bubble that's built up to reverse, to unwind. When you look at the stock market, we're in the seventh year of the bull run. The longest bull run in American market history is 9 years. So we are in more than due for a correction, a pull down of some sort on that. The housing bubble has reinflated amazingly enough over the last several years. So all of these things are blinking red, and when one goes, they are likely to, it's likely to be the domino that sends the others going, and the ultimate effect of that will be to raise gold and silver again. And again, I don't think that's playing out in the near term, like in the next few months, but over the course of the next few years, I think this is what's where it's going. So and when that happens and people start trying to get their physical gold, I think that will only exacerbate the problem because there isn't the gold to cover it. So I don't know about imminent, you know, COMEX is going to collapse any day now kind of thing. But on the longer term, this is absolutely going to be a fundamental, an overturning of established economic wisdom as it's handed down to us from MSNBC and places like that right now that basically laugh at those crazy gold investors, those gold bugs, who, if you look at the 21st century so far, the best investment you could have made, not bonds, not stocks, precious metals. They've done the best.
Well, they, in the 325 paper ounces for every physical ounce backing at COMEX, you don't think that's enough to trigger some sort of a problem right now or right in the immediate future. But do you anticipate that there's any sort of a number? Can we go to 500 paper ounces? Can we go to 1,000 paper ounces for every ounce of gold before 10,000?
Lenny, they're still going.
Crap it up a little.
Come on, Franco. Look at that.
Yeah. Real crowds,
as long
real
as
reactions.
People are willing to buy paper,
reinvent it as far as you need to.
It's only when that mindset fundamentally changes and people don't want paper anymore. And and not only don't want paper anymore, but start cashing in their old paper for gold. Not just buying new and physical gold, but cashing in their holdings.
Do you have any idea of what's going to trigger that change?
Well, as I say, I think it's the triple threat of the bond / stock / housing bubble collapsing.
Right.
And I think they're all related. I think they will occur, maybe not simultaneously, but one after another. And at that point, I mean, the traditional store of value for thousands of years has been gold and silver and precious metals. And I think that this will be no different.
Mm-hmm. Got an article here on ISIS. U.S. refuses to bomb ISIS targets. Can't get clearance. This is a quote. Can't get clearance even with a clear target in front of us. That's apparently the quote is coming from U.S. Air Force pilots. But the report, surprising, seemingly shocking. U.S. refuses to bomb ISIS targets. Do you have an explanation for that? Is that as shocking as it sounds, or are there good reasons to justify that choice?
Well, it should be shocking to anyone who thinks that this is really about ISIS. Of course, what's happening in Syria from the American point of view anyway is not really about ISIS per se. It's about the Syrian government. So I think, again, I've always maintained that their primary objective is not to get rid of ISIS. In fact, they were very much complicit with the rise of ISIS. I think that this understanding this is a lot easier if we put it into a historical perspective, like, for example, the war in Vietnam, which was lost largely because of the rules of engagement that the military was operating under. They were not under rules of engagement that were meant for the military to win any sort of battle. It was specifically put into place to prolong that conflict as long as possible. And I think we all understand the monetary reasons for doing that, and the real powers behind these types of battles are not the political puppets, the front pieces of this. It's more often than not the military-industrial complex that makes the billions or hundreds of billions or, in I guess, overall trillions of dollars off of these types of conflicts. So I think that's one of the things that we have to look at. There is historical parallel that we can look at here, where rules of engagement are used to prolong conflict rather than shorten them and make it a decisive victory.
That's really cold. It's not surprising, but how many millions, at least hundreds of thousands, how many people have to die while someone else is prolonging a conflict who is not on the ground? He's not there. The guy who's prolonging the conflict, whoever they are, they're not among the potential victims. They're watching this thing from the side like spectators at a chess game.
It is, inhuman is the only way to really characterize it. If we take normal, average human beings with empathy and the ability to care about other human beings, it's almost unfathomable. Unfortunately for sociopaths and psychopaths who tend to get into positions of power, that's not the way that they view the world.
We've got about 60 seconds left, and the last comment would be, for me at least, question, does this constitute an act of genocide? When you're intentionally maintaining a conflict that will get people killed, is this genocide?
I would say that there is a case to be made of genocide against the Syrian people at this point. Given decade-long demonstrable involvement of the United States in trying to destabilize the Syrian government, and now in helping that conflict and prolonging that conflict and even as the DOD's own internal documents say, helping the rise of the Islamic State. It's just indisputable right now that they have fostered this conflict that is tearing a nation apart and leading to the largest mass migration in European history since World War II, anyway, let alone the rest of the migration. So it is absolutely tearing apart Syria as a country right now. And I don't know what else to say other than I think that's pretty much the definition of genocide.
Yeah. All right, James, thanks very much for being on the program. Always a pleasure, always interesting, always fascinating. Look forward to talking to you again next week, barring the unforeseen.
Oh, maybe not next week.
We're not doing this next week.
No.
Next week, I guess we won't be doing this because of the Christmas holidays. In any case, Have a happy holiday, James. I'm not sure
Thank
what
you.
Sort
you
of
too.
Holidays
Merry Christmas.
You celebrate in Japan, but Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays. I want to thank you for being on the program. Thank you, folks, for listening. We'll be back next week, the week after that, one of these weeks. We'll be back here when we get through the holidays. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Corbett. Good night.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for